Good morning. I've got my coffee here. It's Wednesday morning. And I'll be heading into work here in a bit, but I just thought it'd be worth talking about what looks to be an ugly day for traders in the markets, specifically the U.S. markets. At this time, and it is, I don't know, it's about 6:30 in the morning, and it is January the 20th, and at this time, the futures market, and again, I'm in Indianapolis, so this is more or less East Coast time. I'm not on the East Coast. Indianapolis is not the East Coast. Yeah, no one ever really makes that mistake. But no, at this time, the S&P is down 1.8%, the Dow is down nearly 2%, and the NASDAQ is flat. Now, for people who watch the markets and may not participate, but watch the markets and financial news and economic news like I do, mainly for the Schadenfreude, you know, the Schadenfreude, that wonderful term that describes a person's interest in the ugliness and disasters and the pain that befalls others. But, you know, I don't have any dog in the hunt. I had a money market, which doesn't even count for this discussion directly. I had a money market up until 2012, and then secretly about nine months before my divorce, I cashed it out and purchased some silver and a firearm. At that time, by 2012, I'd already lost about 40% of its value. So I decided to make a choice. Now, if I kept that money in that money market, who knows? I mean, it's possible I could have made some money off of the dollar spike, but really, does anybody believe that the appreciation and the value of the dollar is a sign of economic health or the future of the dollar? If people believe that there's some direct relationship there, they're fools. You know, on this score, I think guys like Jim Willie are 100% correct. The strength of the dollar is not what people think it is, just like the drop in the price of oil is really not what people think it is. From the Keynesian perspective, from the cornucopian Keynesian abundance economics perspective, the drop in the price of oil is simply because of overproduction. It's got nothing to do with demand destruction. It's got nothing to do with the fact that the price of oil was much, much higher just a few years ago. And that probably was a poison pill on some level. I mean, there is probably a level at which we don't even buy oil. Or let me put it this way. There is probably a level at which we can't afford to use oil. And there is probably a level at which they can't afford to produce it. That's probably reality. Let's get past all the debates about abiotic oil and, you know, oil coming from fossil fuels, which really means dead plants and dead organic material. Let's just get past that debate and just be willing to admit that on some level, you either believe oil is nearly an infinite resource or you believe it's basically finite. And I believe it's basically finite. It might be finite from a multitude of sources, but it is finite. It is highly unlikely that the Earth simply produces an unlimited amount of oil, because that would mean the Earth produces an unlimited amount of those molecules and atoms that make up oil, which would imply that the Earth is a giant fusion reactor that can produce every, well, I won't say every, can produce the heavier elements that generally don't get produced except from a fucking gas giant. You know, or I should say not a gas giant, but a, you know, a red giant star or a very old star, you know, or a supernova. The elements that are higher up on the periodic table, they're not produced in general, you know, by your everyday sun or your everyday star. So, yeah, it's possible that the Earth is a giant fusion reactor, but let's get past that. Let's just get past that for now. So barring infinite oil sources, the real cause of oil price decline is the same reason why the market's having issues. But I wanted to just, you know, do this podcast today because really, one, this could be a giant head fake. I mean, when you talk about the shorts getting screwed, it's entirely plausible that people could go into the market today wearing their shorts and come out with their shorts quite brown. It's entirely plausible that essentially that Janet Yellen will order the PPT team to jump all in, and it's possible that it could end up green today. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but what we have to be prepared for is the fact that this is organized crime. This isn't the natural ebb and flow of economic history. This is a lot like living in the Soviet Union. So when you make guesses about what's going to happen with organized crime, you kind of have to be an insider organized criminal. And I, for one, am not. I'm a schmo. I'm the, you know, like most Americans, I am the, you know, the stomach lint of history, you know, the toe jam of nothing. I exist to the extent that I serve my master, just like most Americans. But there are people who probably know people, and I have no doubt that even though it looks really ugly for the markets today, it could turn out differently. I mean, inevitably, and I say inevitably, all these things will come to pass and all these things will happen. But making predictions about them is really kind of, it's kind of a problematic thing. I mean, I do it every once in a while in the sense that I'll document a guess, and I call them, I sometimes call them predictions, but they're really just wild-ass guesses based upon some knowledge, but intuition and logic to some extent, but they're really just guesses. And back in 2013, my guess was that what looks to be happening right now, and we don't really know what's happening yet, but back in 2013, I expected this all to happen. Now, at the time, I think that was colored by the fact that, you know, my ex-wife dumped me, and probably a lot of negative feelings around there, but no, I kind of expected the whole shit show to fall apart. the whole shit show to fall apart then. And it's really funny, as I watch the futures right now, it already looks like the plunge protection team is stepping in a little, because it was 2% down for the Dow, and now it looks to be closer to about 1.8. So I don't know. Okay, go do it, Janet. Go do it, Planet Janet. Anywho, so like I said, I'm posting today because it looks like today could be ugly, but there's no way to know. But when I was posting on this back in 2013 and on Twitter and whatnot, I kind of drew this weird analogy to what happened to the Edmund Fitzgerald. I don't know if you guys know the story of the Edmund Fitzgerald, but it was a ship on the Great Lakes back in the 70s. That sunk below Lake Superior, you know, the great lake they call Gitchagumi, as the song says. Anyways, there was a mystery for many years about what happened to the ship. And one theory, and I don't know that they've ever proven this, but one theory is that it probably was a combination of factors, but one theory talks about this three-sister pattern with waves. And the three-sister pattern is the following. It's a set of waves, really. And these waves are larger than normal waves. So if the Edmund Fitzgerald was caught in a storm, this would be the kind of storm churn wave that gets created. And the three sisters are three of these waves in a row. And what happened was the first wave, you know, more or less dumped too much water into the Edmund Fitzgerald. The second wave kind of swamped it so it couldn't maneuver. And then the third wave basically came through and finished off the Edmund Fitzgerald. It went underneath the third wave and probably torpedoed straight down, which means there was almost no time to escape the Edmund Fitzgerald, assuming such a thing was feasible, given the fact that it was extremely cold. And, you know, if you jumped in the water, you probably would have frozen to death. If you'd been on the Edmund Fitzgerald, you probably would have frozen to death. And, you know, a matter of minutes. So it wasn't like jumping off of the Edmund Fitzgerald in the middle of the Lake Superior, in the middle of a storm, a cold ice storm, was going to somehow save your life. Well, the first wave of the three sisters that's kind of hit U.S. markets, the first wave kind of hit us in 1999 and 2000, and that was essentially that first kind of, you could say, post-Cold War market crash. And it was the NASDAQ crash, and everybody said, well, it was over-exuberance, and, you know, everybody got too excited about internet stocks, and that explains it. It's got nothing to do with Alan Greenspan at the Federal Reserve changing the way we calculate unemployment and whatnot. It's got nothing to do with Alan Greenspan creating essentially what people have termed the Fed put. It's got nothing to do with that. It had to do with just crazy smart people and a lot of overexuberance. And that was the first sister, and that hit us in 99, 2000, and to some extent 2001. Then the third sister came along, and the second sister came along, and the second sister hit us in beginning in 2007, kind of hit the housing market, basically hit all markets in 2008. And really, this isn't ancient history, so I don't really need to explain the pain and suffering or the experience of 2008. I mean, really, folks, do I need to explain it? It wasn't even a fucking decade ago. I know people have short-term memory. If you were born in 2008, you get a fucking pass. Hell, if you're born in 2000, you probably get a fucking pass. But the point is, okay, the point is adults who were alive and aware in 2008 and who are alive and aware today don't really need to be reminded of that. So that was the second sister, the second wave, the wave that kind of swamped us and reduced our maneuverability. And when you look at what the Federal Reserve's done and what they tried to do, which was insane, I mean, even if you give them the benefit of the doubt, you know, this coffee is good, but even if you give them the benefit of the doubt and you say to yourself, okay, they're not crooks, they're simply flawed. Well, they're disastrously flawed. Essentially, the Federal Reserve is a giant kind of pseudo-Keynesian, you know, neoliberal wonderland. I mean, they probably don't do the things, you know, that Paul Krugman would like them to do, which is to basically build a fleet of helicopters and start dropping money out of them. Because, hey, if you build a fleet, that's stimulus too, bada bing, bada bang. But no, you know, Krugman, he would like to basically reduce the U.S. workforce to people who fly bombers and drop bombs and make bombs and people who build bridges, because essentially, if you ever came into an issue of too many bridges, the bomber pilots could just blow them up. And for Paul Krugman, that would probably be the ideal economic arrangement. But getting real for a second, yeah. So the second sister hit, and Ben Bernanke did his thing, and we had, you know, ZIRP, which looked to be forever, and frankly, at 25 basis points right now, it still is ZIRP, you know, for all intents and purposes. Come on, folks. But no, ZIRP and the many versions of QE, and of course we had TARP 1 and TARP 2, which we can't totally blame on Bernanke, but come on, guys. The idea that Paulson and Bernanke and Bush at the time were not having conversations and making decisions together is freaking ridiculous. Okay, so now as I talk, the NASDAQ is still flat and the Dow is still approximately 1.9% down, 2%, whatever. Anywho, again, akin to the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, there was that third sister. And from my perspective, I thought 2013, the third sister would hit. And who knows? I mean, it might have hit. You know, these are all questions of complexity. And, you know, I think Jim Rickards probably said it best, that it's really, you know, we're talking about predicting an avalanche where it's really that last snowflake that causes it. And we don't really know when those hit. I mean, we can say there's an avalanche building, but it's hard to know exactly when that energy gets released. And I think that's the same thing. Plus, we're talking human history. And I believe that this is way bigger than markets, I should say manipulated markets. This is way bigger than stock markets and the Dow Jones. I mean, I see the world right now through the prism of peak oil. So this is not anything more than a symptom. There is no problem to solve here. This is a symptom of a problem. So yeah, I expected this in 2013, and now it looks to be hitting us. But really, we live in such a manipulated America to these days. You know, I think we lived in an America that's so controlled and so much like an open-air prison. And our sources of information, which I've talked about many times before, are so controlled and so siloed. And there are so few corporations that even control the media. And yeah, there's alternative media, but let's get real, folks. You know, that alternative media, I should say alternative news, is a lot like solar and wind. You know, it doesn't really represent a very great percentage of what people are actually watching. I'm not saying people aren't watching alternate news. It's just, I don't think it's going to save the day. I really don't. In fact, most of the alternative news sites I kind of observe, they've all kind of said things similar to me. In fact, very recently, some have kind of just shut themselves down and said, you know, the time of not trying to warn people or explain what's going on is over. And I think that's basically true. Barring a miracle, like somebody at MIT inventing free energy, what's about to happen is more or less inevitable. And even if some dude invented free energy, it would still be incredibly disruptive. It just would be mostly disruptive in a positive way. What we're about to see is going to be mostly disruptive in incredibly negative ways. So this third sister, this wave that might be hitting now, it might be hitting right now, you know, in 2016, we could be in the beginning of this third wave that seems to be hitting the ship of state, the ship of America, and frankly, the whole world is in trouble. It's not just the United States. This third wave looks to be capable of doing us in. And when I say doing us in, I don't mean end of the world. I do mean that the current paradigm is probably past its shelf date, you know, its expiration date, its sell-by. And because it's past its sell-by, I think people should be willing and welcoming that this is going to happen. But I don't think that's going to happen because, again, you know, human beings, it's not abnormal for them to want the status quo. The normalcy bias exists for a reason because the bias is towards things that support the whole point, you know, reproduction, having kids, having families. Families love stability. If people wonder why we're in the situation we're in, why the Federal Reserve gets away with it, it's because the political class in most societies is made up of families, and families are very conservative in a bad way, and families tend to make decisions based upon kind of a short-term perspective. It's kind of like, you know, a mother looks down at her kid and sees those big round eyes, and she says to herself, well, you know, free healthcare, that's good. I love my kid. I'd want that. You know, the mother looks down at those round eyes and she hears, you know, a Ben Bernanke or an Alan Greenspan or these days Janet Yellen telling her that, you know, the economy's great and people just need to spend money. I'm sure that mom or that dad looks down at those cute little round eyes and says, you know, I'm going to take out my credit card and start spending some money. And I fear there's a day coming when those mothers and fathers will look down at those cute little round eyes of their children, and they'll be told that, you know, Russia and China are our enemies, and, you know, if we don't get them, they'll get us. And I'm sure they'll look down at those round eyes and say, you know what, you know, you beautiful little children, we gotta go nuke China and Russia because I love you. Now, this all sounds really absurd, but folks, that is America in 2016. Incredibly absurd. My description of the absurdity might be open to question, but to question how fucking absurd our political and economic arrangements are at this point is, to me, to admit to the fact that you might have some serious issues with reality. But actually, you might just be admitting to being normal. Anywho, this is long, long, long-winded, and I'm going to have to close this out. But yeah, it looks like the third sister is heading our way. Today looks like it could be a bad day. You know, the Dow futures are hovering between 1.8 and 2% down. Before an opening, that's happened in the last few years. I mean, it's been rare, but since 2008, I think it's probably happened maybe once or twice. Honestly, I don't know for certain. But it is very rare for it to be down this far because typically the plunge protection team is doing everything it can in the off hours. So let's assume for the sake of argument that the plunge protection team under Janet Yellen has run out of ammo. Well, I don't believe it, but let's say they have, because their ammo, they can just print their ammo. They can just make up their ammo. But let's just say they've decided they're too tired of pressing a key on a computer. Then what it really could mean at this point that today could be ugly. I mean, today could be easily a 1,000-point close. It's easily possible, even if the plunge protection team jumps in. We could easily see 1,000 points today drop off the market. On the other hand, this could all be a head fake. This could all be a rope-a-dope. You could all be a bunch of fucking suckers, and you could put in your shorts, and your shorts could get soiled. So I don't know. All I can say is good luck, and put The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, a great song, on your playlist, because I believe there will come a day, and day could be the day, when listening to that song as you watch the numbers go will make you feel better.